ॐ जननीम् शारदाम् देवीम् रामकृष्णम् जगद्गुरुम् पादपद्मे तयोः श्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः.
फर्स्ट् ऐ विल् डील् वित् दि क्वश्चन् दि पेज् नम्बर् आफ् दि गास्पेल् एक्साक्ट्लि ऐ डु नाट् हेव् दि फिसिकल् कापि बट् at the very beginning on the second visit of M to Sri Ramakrishna these five commandments have been discussed. So you will find today we are going to deal with the fourth commandment of Sri Ramakrishna, which is called practice of Viveka. Now we had been discussing the five commandments of Sri Ramakrishna. I hope we remember first commandment, God realization is the only goal of life. For that, we can and must practice four commandments indicating four yogas beautifully and harmoniously combined. Cultivate satsanga always. This is indicative of bhakti yoga. Now and then go into solitude and call on God intensely. This indicates raja yoga. Always practice discrimination between the real and the unreal. Viveka, practice of viveka. This is indicative of jnana yoga. The last commandment, live like a maid servant. That means live an unattached life. This is indicative of karma yoga. Thus, there is no conflict between any of the yogas. Karma yoga, bhakti yoga, raja yoga and jnana yoga. They all must be harmoniously combined. Then the journey to God becomes much beautiful, pleasant, and also easy. In fact, nobody can practice any yoga in isolation, but one becomes the dominant yoga. In our last class, we had discussed about solitude. Let me summarize what we had discussed. Before I do that, I want to point out a fact which I had already pointed out, that unless we practice cultivate satsanga, holy company, right knowledge and wrong knowledge, that means discrimination will not come within us. And when discrimination comes, it is followed by dispassion. Then we must go into solitude now and then to protect and to strengthen our will, our desire for God realization. And during that time, we have to ask ourselves certain questions. Who am I? Where from have I come? Is there a God? What is the goal of life? How to attain the goal of life? Can I have some help from somebody? Usually we call such a person guru. And what are the obstacles in spiritual life? How to overcome them? The time required to deeply think, to ponder deeply, solitude is very necessary. I also had pointed out, solitude is not merely staying in a place where there is very less distraction, more silence. Solitude is to depend totally upon God. No one in this world belongs to us. I do not belong to anybody, only God belongs to me, I belong to God. To strengthen this feeling, and then automatically attachments will fall off, because we have a tendency to depend upon only a dependable person. And the only person who can be depended upon is none other than God. So that feeling is strengthened through solitude, and it is also the ability to be able to be very happy spending our time not leaning upon external distractions, not only people, music, or videos, or even reading of books. So that solitude helps us, and above all, solitude helps us to think about the fact that we are growing old, and young people, however fond we think they are of us, they really do not value old people, and as soon as they grow up, they have to stand on their own feet, they have to lead their own life, they do not require much of our either advice or help. So we have to find out that our pet attractions, attachments have to be slowly lessened. Solitude helps us. Above all, solitude is a very important spiritual discipline indicated both by Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, especially in the 13th chapter. What should a person do? Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadhi, Dukkha, Dosha, Anudarshana. A person should go on thinking about birth, repeated births, and so many sufferings because of three tapas, tapatraya, adhyatmika, adhibhautika, and adhidaivika. Then old age is there. Then the final fact, we have to give up everything. We do not have the faintest memory of what we were in our past life, with whom we were. And just like this life, we were having same attachments, love, hatred in our past lives, and in this life we do not remember anything. Exactly same thing is going to be repeated in the next life. How foolish it is to go on thinking that our relationships are permanent and there are people in this world who love us permanently. One impermanent thing in this world cannot love another impermanent thing. It is psychologically, physically, spiritually impossible to do that. And this fact comes to the fore only when we are in solitude. And above all, solitude is to reside, to abide in our own self. So, the practice of solitude from now onwards is an indispensable part of our spiritual sadhana. Otherwise, our spiritual journey will not progress at all. And incidentally, this universal, unique event that never happened in the known history of human beings, this coronavirus, affected everybody. One of the blessings it bestowed upon us, it forced us to be at home, and then to think how we can be happy when we do not meet people and when we have to depend only upon ourselves. It is an invaluable opportunity for us to almost be like a solitude. Helps us, and it also makes us think the value of life, the helplessness of ourselves in this world, and how God alone can help us. One tiniest organism can bring the whole world down should be a great eye-opener to all of us. So these are some of the important points we have discussed. These are the summarization, so to say, of that topic, the third commandment of Sri Ramakrishna. Now and then, go into solitude and pray to God deeply and try to be with Him as much as possible. If we can develop that, even physically, in the secular world, our life becomes much more happier. With this brief recollection, we will now enter into the fourth commandment of Sri Ramakrishna. Before I go deeper into it, I have to remind ourselves that those who have read the most beautiful work of Shankaracharya, it is called a Prakarana Grantha. I have been discussing it for the last so many months, called Viveka Chudamani. And there he says, before you even dare to touch the book Viveka Chudamani, you must be a fit sadhaka. Who is a fit sadhaka? One who has acquired four qualifications called in Sanskrit sadhana chatushtaya sampatti. What are these qualifications? The very first one is viveka, discrimination. The second is vairagya. Viveka must be followed by vairagya. The third qualification, that control over the body and mind, because however discriminative we are, even if we are equipped with some amount of dispassion, our purva janma samskaras, the habits, the strong desires, the pet opinions that we had developed from the past, not only of this birth, of many, many other births, can in a second, in a moment, overthrow the whole lot and force us to plunge into senseless worldliness. Therefore, we must have sufficient self-control over the body and over the mind. Perfect self-control comes only, I have to tell you, and I think it is a good news, only after God realization. Until God realization, our discrimination and dispassion and self-control are quite shaky. But we must do what best we must do. And the last is mumukshutva, tivra mumukshutva, intense yearning for God realization. Here also, I have to remind ourselves one fact. When we use the words God realization, we really mean self-realization. I want to know about my own self, my own true nature. If some people have objection, I don't believe in God, so I don't need to realize Him. But if the same idea is rephrased, self-realization, don't you want to know what is your true nature? What are your capacities, human possibilities, all the talents lying deep within you? What are your weaknesses so that you can become a better person by recognizing them and overcoming them? All these things really leading only to one's own happiness. I can put it in a slightly funny manner. By realizing God, God doesn't gain anything. Only we gain everything. If we are very unhappy, we become happy. If we are less happy, we become more happy. And if we want to be most happy, then the scriptures unilaterally declare that our nature is Sachidananda. We are Amrutasya Putraha. So, a tremendous desire for God realization, or here mumukshutva means to be completely free from the bondage of this secular world, meaning body and mind. And it is in every way, it is very beneficial. Now let us recollect and say, the very first step is discrimination, means to know what is right, what is wrong, what is superior, what is inferior. And if we can have that right knowledge through discrimination, then the next step follows. We should not desire anything inferior. We should desire only the most superior thing. That is called that process of giving up unhappiness, giving up depression, giving up this dull-heartedness, and always be filled with joy. That process is called vairagya. Many people get frightened about Vairagya because they think only about sannyasa. Sannyasa has two aspects, external and internal. There are some people who like to have this style of life. I call it lifestyle. Some people want to be free from marriage, from society, from human beings, and most research workers are like that. So they are quite happy all to be by themselves, and they can deeply think, and they are quite happy when no outside disturbance is there. This is the external lifestyle. For most of us, this is not possible. So what is possible is whether we are householders or sannyasins, in whichever field we are working, most important thing is you have internal vairagya. Internally, we have dispassion, we have sufficient willpower provided, then we can give up. Give up not what is better, but give up what is completely harmful, worse, which gives us only lower type of happiness and lower type of knowledge, and our talents, inherent potentialities, which Huxley calls human possibilities, they should be given up. We are only asked to become more happy, more healthy, more knowledgeable, and more serviceable to the world. All these ideas are included in that one word, vairagya. And if dispassion if discrimination is not followed by dispassion, thus discrimination is completely useless. Now this dispassion requires tremendous amount of mind control, body control. So automatically this vairagya brings us to that third step, body-mind control, which is indicated as shama dhamadi shat sampatti. If in that order, discrimination followed by dispassion followed by some amount of body-mind control, then our initial desire for self-realization to become free of all these bonds, and bondage means suffering, becomes very strong, and that is named as mumukshutva. Important point we have to remember is these four must be practiced together, but the lowest step is viveka, next higher step is vairagya, next higher step is shamadamadi shatka sampatti, and then only the last step, complete deep desire to realize God. And only a person who has at least a little bit of these four qualities is called an adhikari, a fit person. Why fitness? Is not to discriminate between different people, but to make ourselves so that we can really progress through these four steps. If we are not having these four steps, it is impossible to concentrate our mind, to control the body mind, and journey will stop at where we are, if not worse. Worse means we may even fall down. With this background, let us now go a little bit deep. Really, it is a wonderful subject, but we will deal with it as much as we can with the help of Sri Ramakrishna's gospel. Sri Ramakrishna, in answer to M's, how I can progress in spiritual life, is speaking. These are the quotations from Sri Ramakrishna's gospel, as I said, M's second visit to Sri Ramakrishna. Together with this means, first of all, he teaches how to live in this world like a maid servant. Having completed that topic, Ramakrishna is coming. We have just reversed a little bit. The fourth commandment, we made it as fifth, and the fifth commandment, we made it as the fourth. Together with this, you must practice discrimination. And Sri Ramakrishna is explaining, what is discrimination? Lust and gold is impermanent. God is the only eternal substance. Sri Ramakrishna is elaborating, what does a man get with money? Food, clothes, and a dwelling place, nothing more. You cannot realize God with its help. Therefore, money can never be the goal of life. That is the process of discrimination. Within these few words, we must always remember Sri Ramakrishna's words are like sutras. We need elaborate commentary to understand. Why is it so? Because these great souls, like Narada, like Patanjali, they compress a tremendous amount of information on their words. There is a type of literature. This is known as sutra literature. Sutra literally means a thread, aphorism. An aphorism is one with very few words, and it was also necessary at that time. In our ancient times, there was no printed paper and there was not even writing had come into vogue. So a teacher teaches his lessons. Maybe he will take months together to elaborate a particular point, and he will teach the disciples, the pupils, with crystal clear clarity. Having taught them, he wants them to memorize. Unfortunately, in a very few of us are endowed with this tremendous power of memory. So the whole thing the teacher had taught is compressed into the shortest possible words, as few words as possible and as necessary. So this kind of sutra literature had come into being. Brahma Sutras, Yoga Sutras, Dharma Sutras, Bhakti Sutras, Karma Sutras, and so the Ramakrishna's word is like a sutra. On many occasions, these what is called pithi statements have been elaborated with stories, with statements, with examples, with analogies, and other things. The point is, unless we know what has been taught, this sutra practically becomes meaningless. That's why these days, for example, Brahma Sutra, we require great acharyas like Shankara, Ramanuja, Mathwa. Otherwise, without their help, explanation, these sutras become completely enigmatic and not understandable, and therefore not helpful for us in any way. Fortunately, Sri Ramakrishna's gospel will give enough hints in course of time. We are only discussing the important points that Sri Ramakrishna had taught. As I mentioned earlier, the whole Upanishads are comprised of this Bhagavad Gita. And the whole essence of Bhagavad Gita is comprised in this beautiful teachings of Sri Ramakrishna called the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. It is a work consisting of more than 1000 pages. And the whole of Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna is comprised again in the very first chapter. And the very first chapter can be squeezed into these 5 commandments. But it doesn't mean that we have to encourage laziness. Since Swamiji, you are telling, then I will just read every day these 5 commandments and that is more than sufficient. We will not be able to understand unless we read the entire gospel. Not only that, gospel, the entire gospel is said to be an aphoristic statement, and Swami Vivekananda's complete works is supposed to be its commentary. And Swami Vivekananda's commentary is aphoristic. All the Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita are supposed to be that commentary. Anyway, what I am trying to tell you, it is enough. This one gospel of Sri Ramakrishna is one. I recollect a beautiful incident. In America, there was one of our Swami Sarvagatananda. He was head of our Boston Center, Vedanta Center. And once a professor from the nearby university, he had come and met the Swami. And the Swami presented the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. And then after a few days, the man came back with this Gospel and said, "Swami, thank you for giving me, but I don't find it of much use. So I don't want to keep it. Please give it to somebody." Swami again pressed it into his hands and said, "I am requesting you, please go through this Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna once more. After that, if you do not want, then I will take it back." So the professor, with some reluctance, took it back. And he did not appear for quite a number of days. Then he came and fell at the feet of the Swami, said, "Swami, what a terrible mistake I was going to make by returning this book to you. This is the most wonderful book that I have ever come across. After studying this Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, I could understand the whole American culture, where it is going wrong. Because Sri Ramakrishna's usage of the word, what is Maya, is comprised of two words. This is what we call two Ks, Kama and Kanchana. The letter K, not C-A-S-E, K, Kama and Kanchana. Most Western culture is nothing but consisting of what is called woman and gold, lust and gold, sex and money, by whatever name is. And there is also a way out. This gospel shows us the way out." Then, very strange statement the professor seems to have made. Once he was asked, "If you were isolated in an island for life, which book would you like to carry?" And without the least hesitation, he said, "I would take only one book, that is the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna." I am not really saying all these things as an advertisement for the Gospel, but it is the essence of all scriptures. And if we, with faith, purity of heart and prayer, and these are the qualities with which we have to study the scriptures, then we don't need any other scripture, because this is the modern Veda put in the simplest of language and put in a language that is understandable by every one of us, and it is highly practical. So, we are studying, deeply analyzing the fourth commandment of Sri Ramakrishna, which is called discrimination. Sri Ramakrishna continues, "As soon as a man finds his mind wandering away to the unreal." Unreal means here to the world. But we also have to understand, when Sri Ramakrishna says this world is unreal, he is talking from his standpoint. But for us, this world is the only reality. We have to put it in the reverse way. God is unreal. This world alone is real as we are now constituted at present. How do we know? Sit in front of God and try to meditate, your mind goes to what we call our reality. If God is real, then we should never take away our mind from reality. This is the law. Whatever we know as real, we only desire that one, and we don't want to be away from it. And whatever we know as unreal, we would never like to be even desiring that unreal. If, for example, a man meets a woman and he declares his undying love, he himself is subject to death and he is declaring undying love. And then the woman asks, what is the meaning of undying reality, undying fact? And what is it that the woman is also subject to death, man also is subject to death? And death doesn't mean physical disappearance. Death means wandering away from our ideas, changing our mind. Every millisecond our body is changing, our mind also is changing. So, when we are experiencing this world as real, God becomes unreal. But if we have tremendous faith in the words of the scriptures, in the words of the Guru, this is called Shraddha, then even though we have not realized the fact of God, but because of our deep faith, we just believe God alone is real and this world is unreal. Whether God is real or unreal, we do not know excepting through the teachings of the scriptures. But this world is unreal, that means it is changing all the time. And that is the definition of unreality. Whatever changes, that is unreal. That means you cannot rely upon it. Here, our experience is crystal clear. Every day, how many people are dying? How many people are changing their religions? How many loving couple divorce after some time? How much of property, belongings, etc., they disappear, washed away, either because of our misfortune or because of some people's cheating us whom we trust. This is an everyday experience. Nobody can deny this fact. So, even then, in our imagination, we feel that this world is real because, unfortunately, we are dealing with this world day and night through these five sense organs, through this body, and above all, through our romantic imagination. So, but here Sri Ramakrishna is telling, as soon as a man finds his mind wandering away from God to the unreal, means to this world, he should apply discrimination. Sri Ramakrishna is a master analogist. He gives analogies like Kalidasa. The moment an elephant stretches out its trunk to eat a plantain tree belonging to the neighbor, it gets a blow from the iron goad of the driver. With these examples, Sri Ramakrishna is emphasizing, if you wish to realize God, if you wish to become blessed, if you wish to become free from the bondages of this world, please remember, when we use these words, bondage of the world, we mean there are only two things, bondage of the body and mind. So, this was the fourth commandment of Sri Ramakrishna. Discrimination is the faculty of distinguishing the higher from the lower, the right from the wrong, the sacred from the profane, and living according to that understanding. Now, there are certain facts which I had already hinted at. First, discrimination should not be mere intellectual gymnastics. Right understanding without the effort to lead an appropriate life is not only useless, it is dangerous and results in much suffering. Second, discrimination should be followed by dispassion and self-control. Third, right discrimination always, inevitably, results in peace, joy, and self-knowledge. These are the three key points in the practice of discrimination. Now, we may be wondering, is it that we have to specially develop this faculty of discrimination, viveka, or are we already having it and we are already practicing it every single minute of our life? And it is, what is the answer? Yes. Whenever you get up in the morning, you start discriminating. I want a cup of tea. And how much of tea? How much of sugar? How much of milk? Because that's what helps you, that is what makes you a happier person. Otherwise, it might create problem. Then when you go and have breakfast, what breakfast, how much butter, how much jam, whether I am a diabetic person or not, what am I allowed? We are practicing discrimination every day and every time. Then you want to go reach the office. How to go? By motorcycle or by car or by tram? What time it is better and which class is better, etc. Then when you reach the office, what is the most important work you need to discharge that day? So these are called priorities, discriminating. And when you want to go and travel to some place, which plane, which time, and which class, how much money it costs, every millisecond we are discriminating. If you go to a shop to buy some dress, which is cheaper, which is of quality, which is appropriate, and which suits your body perfectly, we are practicing. When you are driving your car, whether to turn to the left or right, go straight, stop, start, all the time you are discriminating. So the faculty of discrimination is one of the faculties that are inherent, and it belongs to the intellect. At the same time, we also have to, one important point we have to understand is, unless we know two facts, suppose you want to buy a sweet. This is a superior sweet, this is an inferior sweet. This is a better dress and this is an inferior dress. That means, to be able to discriminate, you should have knowledge, good knowledge of both the superior object as well as the inferior object. Otherwise, discrimination is not possible. And that is where doubts come into our minds. You are asking, O Ramakrishna, you are asking us to practice discrimination. We know about the world, but we don't know anything about God. Without knowing these two objects, how to practice really discrimination? You know what is the right answer? The right answer is, even though we are living in this world, we don't have any knowledge, discriminating knowledge about this world. In fact, our understanding of this world is anything but right understanding. What is it? Impermanent as permanent, the perishable as imperishable, the rotten, the dangerous as most dear to us. Our Ulta Bhujali Ram. I want to share with you a beautiful story. This is very popular in the North India. There was, you know, in North India, more sadhus are to be found than in South India. Do you know why? South Indians are kanjushi people, miserly people. They don't want to share anything with the sadhus or beggars. But in North India, people are extraordinarily generous. When they see a sadhu, they don't allow him to go without food, especially at noon, especially in some states like Punjab, etc. Now you understand why that so many thousands and thousands of sadhus go to North India, because they also human beings, they need food, and that bhiksha is available freely. Only now we see a few number of people, sadhus and sannyasins in here. So in North India, there was a sadhu, and he liked to wander, and he liked to carry quite a good amount of luggage. And after some time, he felt it is a very burdensome. He was a Rama Bhakta, devotee of Rama. One day, he thought, if I pray to Rama, and then I will ask for a horse, and if he gives the horse, then I can put all my this luggage, and I also, myself also, can ride him, my wandering becomes much easier. Foolish fellow, really, not understanding, he can give you a horse, but your whole life, day will be spent only in looking after the horse, feeding the horse, grooming the horse, and hairdressing the horse, and all those things. Anyway, so this foolish sadhu, he went, real innocent person, naive we call him, went on praying, O Rama, give me a horse. And he was sure Rama would answer his prayer. And as he was walking, suddenly he found one soldier was in a hurry. He was riding a mare and he was walking fast. Unfortunately, that mare was completely pregnant. When it reached the spot where the sadhu was walking, it gave birth to a fowl, and now the officer was in a hurry, but the fowl cannot be left behind. Then the officer saw this takada, quite stout sadhu, called him, "Hey Sadhu Baba, carry this fowl to the next military station and deposit there," and went away. And the sadhu had no option, so he had to take up, carry this fowl on his shoulders, and while carrying it, he started talking with Rama. "Oh Rama, ulta bhujili, I wanted a horse to carry me. I did not want a horse so that I can carry it." Anyway, God never misunderstands. He gives only what is very appropriate. So, what are we talking about? We neither know about the true nature of this world. We, of course, do not know the nature of God. Then, that is why, how do we know? From the scriptures. Of course, we have some experience of the world. Who did not experience a tragedy, a death, and loss of something, old age, and disease, and so many miseries? We are all experiencing this corona misery now. This is called part of the Tritapa. Who could escape? Previously, certain things could be escaped if we are wealthy people and we can get first-class treatment. But this one, even the Prime Minister of UK had to be treated through the same corona like the poorest persons in India. Now, what are we talking about? We have very wrong understanding of this world. We, of course, have no knowledge of God. Both these we have to get from the scriptures. That is why, while defining what is Shraddha, and mind you, this word Shraddha has no equivalent word in English language. Faith is the, or strong faith is the, in very inadequate translation of this word Shraddha. What is Shraddha? Let me expound here so that we can understand our future talks also better. There are two feelings. One is called belief and one is called Shraddha. Of course, the English words faith and belief are most often used synonymously. But we will have to distinguish them. Here is belief. A person says, "I believe in God. I have faith in God." That is called belief. Or another person says, "I have Shraddha in the words of the Guru and the scripture, and so I believe in Vedas. I believe in God." Because the Vedas describe God as the reality, only reality. Now, do we have Shraddha or do we have only belief? How do we know? This is the first discrimination we have to come through. So, what is the way to understand this one? Here is the way. If we have belief and that belief is controlled by us, a belief that is controlled only by us, that means when we are happy, the belief is strong. When we are unhappy, it is less strong. If any untoward event happens, our belief can be shaken to the very roots. As they say, even a cloudy climate can lessen our belief because it belongs to us. But if it is Shraddha, deep faith, this is the nearest to weak English translation, and Shraddha becomes like a ghost. When a ghost possesses you, you have absolutely no control over it. Only it will control us. So this is the difference. When we have belief, it becomes sometimes less, sometimes more. Usually it is lukewarm. But when Shraddha possesses us, like Nachiketa was possessed by Shraddha, he is completely helpless. Ramakrishna was making a statement. "I thought I would lead an ordinary householder's life just like my father. My father was my highest ideal in life. He was truthful. He was kind and compassionate. He had tremendous faith in God and he used to worship God. I would like to follow his footsteps." But this Divine Mother possessed me. This madness for God realization possessed me like a ghost, and it made me go through these superhuman efforts for more than 12 long years. I had absolutely no control over it. Many times Sri Ramakrishna made this statement. So coming back to our subject, that a person who has sufficient faith, Shraddha, sometimes I will use that word faith, deep faith, which is equivalent to Shraddha, and sometimes I use the Sanskrit word itself, Shraddha, in the scriptures. Now the scriptures tell us that God alone is real and everything else is impermanent. This is what we read just now from the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. Every object in this world is impermanent. God alone is permanent. Because if we have an idea of impermanency, we must also have the idea of what is permanent. Otherwise, we cannot understand what is called impermanent. For example, if you don't know what is darkness, you will never know what is light. If you don't know what is black, you will never understand what is white. If you don't know what is unhappiness, you will never know what is happiness. That's why if you are continuously happy, then do you know what happens? You will never know that you are happy. That's why now and then, a little bit of headache, stomachache, and when you come out of it, you feel you are filled with redoubled joy, etc. These are all right understandings about discrimination. So what happens when a person attains to right discrimination? That means he will have right knowledge. And right knowledge leads to right action. Right action leads to right result of the action. And as a result, right discrimination results in peace, joy, and self-knowledge. Discrimination is there in the heart of every creature, helping it survive and thrive. But it is only in man that discrimination attains a glory that is unsurpassed. For it leads man to self-knowledge. The S here is capital S. So many of us don't have even lower S knowledge. That is to say, what is the constitution of our body? What is the constitution of our mind? What are our capabilities, potentialities? What are our, what you call, assets? What are also our weaknesses? These we are completely unaware. That is why so many psychologists have to come and help us. If we had a correct estimate of our own psychological nature as well as physical nature, we could be more healthy, both physically as well as mentally. You know, now I mentioned this fact many times, that in the West, more than 40% of the people are mentally sick, either in a smaller way or in a bigger way. Now, who could be sick? A person who doesn't know what is one's own mind, one's own body. Therefore, he doesn't know how much food he has to eat, what type of food he has to eat, what type of exercise he has to do, and what type of ideas he should swallow, what ideas he should never allow to enter into the mind. Such a person would have no need to visit any psychologist or psychiatrist. But the very fact that for more than 40%, and slowly that number is increasing in India also, clearly it is indicating that we are lacking in discrimination. Discrimination means right knowledge. So it leads, this discrimination, that means right knowledge, alone leads man to self-knowledge. And what does self-knowledge do? It will lead us to absolute freedom. Without discrimination, man cannot be happy, even in worldly life, not to speak of attaining any spiritual success. Let me give you a small example. One day, Sriram Krishna went out to attend somebody's invitation. And for some reason, peculiar reason, the host neglected to look after Sriram Krishna and his devotees. And they themselves had to scramble, join the crowd. Somehow they found out, and then at last some remnants of the feast were thrown into the plate of Sriram Krishna and others. Of Sriram Krishna's pet disciple, Swami Brahmananda, Rakhal Maharaj, he got very angry. And then he said, "Let us go away from here. These people don't know how to treat us." Sriram Krishna coolly smiled and said, "Sit down, sit down. You seem to be absolutely lacking any intelligence. Suppose we give up taking this food and at this time go on reaching Dakshineswar, and it will be more than 12 o'clock, then whole night you have to go on fasting. At least something you are getting here. Simply talking will not do. Sit down and eat as much as you can." So, even though he was a man of God realization, even in the smallest points, he used to practice tremendous discrimination. Another small incident comes to my mind, you know. So he used to teach householders. He was supposed to be a sannyasi, innocent of householders' secrets. So he is telling, when you go to buy something, first of all, don't go to one shop and buy in a rush. You just visit 3-4 shops, find out which shop has got better quality thing that you want, and ask what is the prices in different shops. Thus you will come to know that at least in one shop it will be and less costly. That means you will save some money. And then he used to say, some shops, they give what we call in Kannada, like kosaru, something extra they will give. Suppose you buy some fruits, 2-3 kg, he might throw in 1 or 2 extra mangoes into it. Don't leave that and come. And ask for something extra and come. So Sriram Krishna was an expert, not only in spiritual advice, but even in worldly advice also. There are so many incidents, say. So without discrimination, man cannot be happy, even in worldly life, not to speak of attaining any spiritual success. All successful people, whether spiritual or secular, possess it in a greater or lesser degree. Most people, though, use it only for worldly ends. There are some people who are highly successful in worldly life. They must be endowed with really a higher power of discrimination. So, discrimination is absolutely necessary, not only to be successful in spiritual life, but even to be happy in worldly life. And a part of the discrimination, I will tell you one thing in today's class before we stop. Supposing somebody unnecessarily, unjustifiably criticizes you for some reason, and most often it happens to be our own family members. So if somebody criticizes, and if you are oversensitive plant, then that will go on troubling you. It will revoke in you terrible feelings of anger and hatred, etc. And your behavior reaction with the other person becomes, really speaking, a negative force in life. So what should be done? Sriram Krishna's advice is, in this world, there is nobody who escapes the criticism of other people. And do you know the fact, the most criticized, the most find-faulting person being God. Because when we don't get any explanation, the first person we put our blame on God. And moreover, we say, you are capable of helping me. Not only you are not helping me, you are only heaping so many sufferings upon my head. Sriram Krishna used to say, if you go on bothering about it, then you will never be happy. So what is discrimination? There are people who go on criticizing us, trying to pull us down. Never imagine there will be a world where everybody is going only praising you. In fact, I don't think anybody will praise you. You are the only candidate to praise yourself. So Sri Ramakrishna gave lot of advice on how to ignore other people's looking us down or heaping insults or trying to cheat us. It is the most common thing in this whole world. So discrimination there. What is discrimination? In this instance, this is the nature of people. They are worldly people and they will do only sometimes you hiss so that you can protect yourself. But never take revenge and never waste your time. In fact, on the contrary, if somebody is criticizing you, he is perhaps helping you unintentionally much more in your spiritual life than otherwise. These are the very beautiful points. I have got a lot to speak to you. I will be speaking in our next class.
Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Muhur Muhur.
May Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with bhakti.